I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular. Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm Jody Weitz, your life and work coach, making sure that your professional and lifestyles are nothing less than spectacular. I'm here with Michelle Merritt. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, I'm excited to be with you.
Woohoo, I love that. All right, let me tell you a little bit about Michelle. Drawing on her 20-year corporate career as a Fortune 500 recruiter and corporate culture executive, Michelle provides a wealth of experience for her clients. Today, she guides executive leaders through the end-to-end job search process, from resume writing to negotiating offers. As a sought-after speaker and trainer, Michelle is a trusted source for leading-edge trends affecting senior-level job seekers and board candidates. Wow, lovely. That's great.
Michelle, I'm a lucky girl.
I know. What fun. Mm-hmm. You know, have you always wanted to work with leaders, CEOs, and having them find jobs, or has finding jobs just been easy for you and you thought you'd share it with the top brass?
You know, I don't think it's easy for too many people. and I will say it was never what I sought out, what I planned to do. My family will tell you that when I was a very young child, I wanted to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader because they were on the Love Boat, right?
Oh, boy.
So that was my first career aspiration. As time went on and perhaps being an NFL cheerleader wasn't the path. And I live in Indianapolis, so I should clarify that I would have switched.
Dallas, Indianapolis. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that said, my career began as a lighting and electrical designer for the custom home building industry.
Goodness.
And unfortunately, the firm I was working for went bankrupt. Mm. And a recruiter called me and said, I need someone who understands construction and home building. Will you come recruit for me? And I said, no. I said, I'm not interested. I don't like recruiters. They bother me. I thank you, but no. Mm. And he convinced me that he could teach me what I needed to know and change my life. And he did just that. And so for many years, until 2008, when suddenly no one needed a home building recruiter, as you may recall.
Yes, 2008, a big year.
A big year.
Yeah.
But until 2008, I was a national home building recruiter working with C-level executives across the country, especially the western portion of the United States. At the Fortune 500 level. So great experience. And I took that experience and parlayed it into building first my own firm, a career management firm. I was excellent at the candidate side of recruiting. I was not excellent at the business development side, but I was known to have the most prepared, the most well-spoken, the strongest candidates with the strongest interviews, et cetera. And so what I knew was I could take that and start helping people really position themselves. In the same time that I was doing that, Deborah Boggs was launching DNS, Executive Career Management. And we've been friends for many, many years. And so our businesses sort of came together and paralleled each other for many years. And then luckily in January of this year, we merged both companies. That is how my role became Chief Strategy Officer of DNS.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Finding, you know, we all have gifts, and it's wonderful when we can find another person to work with to fill in for the gifts that aren't prominent yet.
Right. And so Deborah's an excellent balance. She's an exceptional business development person. She's a great CEO. Mm. And so we balance each other very, very nicely.
Mm. Great. How many people do you have working
for? So we're a
team
of 15 currently and growing.
Great. That is lovely. So, let's start off with, you work with the C-class and CEOs, and they're not an easy lot to say, you need to say that, and you want to come off as this, and you need, they're, in my experiences, can be not always challenging to work with as far as giving them the answers. What do you do in those cases?
So I think, first of all, when a client comes to us, they're already seeking answers, right? They
Yes.
know that there is something amiss, right? And so then it's having some of the hard conversations with some soft truth, meaning, these conversations aren't easy, and
No,
it's
they're not.
hard for any of us. Make no mistake, whether you're entering your first job or you are the CEO of a Fortune 20 organization, putting yourself out there and being vulnerable in a career transition is difficult. It's not easy for anyone. And so a lot of times we walk through how to manage our egos a little bit, how to get comfortable being uncomfortable. That's the thing I tell people all the time. Get comfortable being uncomfortable because
Great.
this is going to be hard. It is a full-time job to find a new career or to find the next turn in our careers.
Right. And you mentioned, I'm just curious, soft truth. Now, can you tell me what that means?
So I think for me, what it means is talking through what's working and what isn't and why it may not be working. Right. So if a client comes to me and says, Michelle, I'm saying this. Okay, but how are we saying it? And what are the things that need to be changed? I'm never a fan of being scripted. I want people to be comfortable and authentic in their conversation, but I also want you to be thoughtful in your words, right? Is there a word choice that you're using that doesn't hit or register with your audience, right? Know your audience. And what does that look like?
That's great. That's really great. 'Cause again, it's just the your audiences are different, and you do have to change really the way you represent yourself, your mindset, and what you're gonna communicate with them. Because a lot of people don't realize that. They say, oh, I've had so much great experience and success. I just want to bring that up. But yes, soft truth is bringing that up a different way.
Right. It's bringing it up, and it's also being willing to say, who is my audience, right? Whether we're talking about the resume and the executive CV and the bio, and remembering that those documents are about you but not for you. They're for the reader. Or if we're talking about how we present to a board in a panel interview, something like that. Who is our audience? Who is our intended audience? Because your presentation is about you, but it's not for you.
Great. In addition to understanding your audience, what would you say is maybe the three top important things to present yourself in an interview or to say in an interview?
So I think the number one thing is know what you bring, right? But be willing to showcase it in a way that speaks to your audience, right? So you may have a very specific idea of, well, I'm great at X, super. But if that's not what the organization needs, how are you presenting it in a way to demonstrate that you can still benefit them? One of the other things I always say is treat the interview as a conversation, right? Especially at an executive level, but even throughout most management levels and beyond, this should be a conversation. I'm always hesitant, especially the higher up we go, when an organization says, you can have six, we're going to ask you six questions and you can ask us two, and then the interview will be over, right? That's a red flag for me when that happens. So, treat it as a conversation, which means you've done your due diligence ahead of time about the team, about the people that you're working, will be interviewing with, excuse me, things like that. So know your audience and know what they need to hear and position it that way. Research it, treat it as a conversation. And then the last piece I would say in regards to the interview is find out how you can help. Right. So early on in a conversation, I may sit down and say, thank you so much for taking the time to meet me. I am excited to hear how I can help. I believe it was Fred Rogers who said, look for the helpers. And that's what we all want, right? We all want someone who can help.
Well, we're looking for someone to solve a problem
Absolutely.
within our organization. Right. Yeah, that's great. And I love the way you started the show. Hi, Jody. I'm excited to be here. I
Thanks.
felt that. You know, that was
It's genuine. I mean it.
it is. Well, thank you. And I think it in many ways is an icebreaker, and in many ways it's authentic of the person to say, "Well, thanks for giving me a chance." I mean, no matter how high you go. So, in doing your due diligence, you mentioned know who is going to be on the interview team. How do you find that out, or can you just ask that question of your contact to say, I'd love to know who I'm talking with?
Absolutely. And they should be telling you that. But if for some reason they don't be afraid to ask who will be in the room and what's their role, right? So then you can start researching their LinkedIn profile, Googling them, finding out things that are professional in nature, of course, about them. And that way you can start building answers and scenarios into your answers, into the discussion that matter to the people sitting at the table.
Sure, absolutely. And going back to solutions and how can I help, how would you go about finding out about a problem that that company may be having, or just the way you can help out to help you ace the interview?
One of the things I always tell people is look for the themes in the questions, right? So, is there a common denominator in the types of questions that you're being asked? Are you being asked a lot of questions around compliance, around regulatory issues? Are you being asked a lot of questions around finance or budgets? I once sat in as a consultant on an interview process where an organization, medium-sized organization, was hiring a department manager, and they were asking lots of questions around people. Right? How do you manage difficult people, the meeting after the meeting, those sort of things. And as time went on, not one candidate said, wait a minute, I'm detecting a theme. What's happening here? What's your people problem? Right? And these were people that were flying in from all over the country to be interviewed for this job. When they all left, I turned to the interview team and said, what's going on with your people? And they said,
Good.
well, we have a legacy employee who believes they should have this job. He will not be getting that job, and he's going to be very upset about it. Boy, that would have been good information to have if I were one of the interviewees, right?
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
look for the themes and don't be afraid to ask, because again, this should be a conversation. And if people suddenly become very guarded, if people suddenly don't want to share that with you,
Good
that's
information.
good information to have, and it tells you more about the culture than anything you've read on their website.
Exactly. You can say, do I really want to work with people who are going to keep me in the dark?
Right.
Do I want to work with people who are poor communicators? That is something that I love hearing you say is really hear patterns and check it out. Because that will definitely get you to stand out.
Absolutely.
Any other ways to stand out in an interview?
I think there are several, right? So number one, from the beginning of our first impressions, right? We want to make sure that our documents are in place. We want to make sure everything has that shows that executive presence that we're working so hard to share. We want to make sure that everything from our speech patterns to the way we engage other people to our appearance is where it needs to be for that interview. And it may be very different depending on who you're meeting with. It may be very different depending on the industry or even the part of the country or the world you're in. So, but be mindful of your overall executive presence. That's exuding confidence, right? That is knowing your numbers. That's being able to have good communication from the beginning. It is a physical presence as well that is confident and polished. Doesn't have to be a three-piece Wall Street suit if you're, if you're in Nebraska, interviewing for a C-level position in a say a local bank, but you do need to know your audience and present yourself accordingly.
So what would you say in part of the appearance, knowing that the culture is casual? I mean, out in San Francisco Bay Area, tech firms, notable hoodies, jeans, t-shirts, etc. And you're coming in, where would be a good balance on appearance?
Sure. So I think it's there's the my mom used to say the answer is always in the middle, right? Meaning that you don't have to go. I wouldn't be wearing flip-flops and a hoodie to an interview, right? We want to look like our best selves on our best day, right? So what does that look like for you? Each person's going to be a little bit different, but having a conversation and again meeting our peers where they are. We don't want to overdress for our industry, but we also don't want to be the most casual person in the room.
Okay, no hoodies. I love that. Oh, that's great. In talking to, the team, let's say you made round one, two, three, you love it. It's a great job, but the salary is low. How would you negotiate a higher salary?
Well, hopefully you've had this conversation early on in the beginning to understand what the range was of the position. So one of the things that we advise people is when a recruiter or a hiring manager asks you, "Where do you need to be?" We do not provide a range. This is the one time where it's appropriate to answer a question with a question. So if a recruiter says, "Michelle, where do you need to be?" I'm not going to say I need to be between 275 and 300. I'm going to say I'm going to respond by saying, "Tell me what your range is, and I can let you know if that works for me."
Do you ever get pushback on that?
Once in a while, once in a while. But what I'll say is this: if we provide a range, we automatically tell the person that we are taking the low, we're willing to take that lowest number. So again, if my range is 500 to 600, that's a big jump, right? And I'm telling someone I'll take $100,000 less than what I really said I wanted, right? So knowing those numbers, and instead of giving that range, asking for that the range for the position and being transparent. So if in my 500 to 600 example, if their range is 520 to 550, then I may say to them, so that you're aware, I am at the top, I'm going to be in the top end of your range, but I am interested in continuing the discussion.
Okay, and you would do that
I would do that as early as possible.
first meeting, first interview.
And a lot of times, the recruiter or the hiring manager or the talent acquisition person, if it's an internal person, should be asking those questions ahead of time. And I believe in California and several other states, unfortunately, not in Indiana where I live, it is a requirement now to show the range of the positions. Now those can be really broad in order to not be
Do
too
it
specific,
track, yeah.
right? But at least in about 20 of the states, I believe now they are asking for that. I will also say that in 22 states and municipalities now, it is illegal to ask what your current salary is. So you do not have to disclose that.
I did not know that.
If you HR Dive is a great website. You can search HR Dive, and they keep an updated list of who the states and municipalities are that have outlawed that practice. So there are still lots of states and municipalities, mine included, that have not outlawed that practice, but more and more are.
Very curious. That's I like that. It's almost like sexism, racism, and salaryism, as far as they're in their mind going, oh, they're getting more or less, and we're going to try to, what about stock options? Would you take that? And yeah, not being very upfront, which may also give you more information about the culture. of the company. Now, what about if you were a woman and you were bargaining to negotiate salary? Is that different from a man? What would you say about that?
A great question, and I would say this: confidence matters, right? Again, know your numbers, ask the right questions, don't give a range, know what's important to you. So total compensation is made up of a variety of things, right? It's salary, but it's also bonus, right? And for some of us, so you mentioned being in the tech world, if you're in tech sales, for example, that is a heavy bonus potential sort of compensation package. One of the questions I'm asking, male or female, doesn't matter. One of the questions I'm asking, though, is tell me what the average bonus payout has been in the last 5 years.
Good one. Yeah.
Right? Because I want to know what the actual payout has been. And I always go back to a pre-pandemic number because in 2020, 2021, even into 2022, the pandemic, as we all know, really impacted every business differently. Some businesses, if you worked in vaccine sales, for example, skyrocketed. You had some sizable bonuses those years,
Absolutely, yeah.
right? If you worked in hospitality, for example, your bonuses were practically nil, or you lost your job during that time. So get a number, get an average that includes that, but is not only in that number, so that we have that fair depiction. But it's also stock options, as you mentioned, it's retirement benefits, it's health insurance, it might be remote work, it might be
Yes.
workplace flexibility. There can be a variety of things that happen that make up its severance packages, right? Predetermined severance, all of those sort of things. How the buyout if you're in a startup situation, right? And that divestiture clause, and what does that look like? Equity, all of those things. So know what those numbers are and understand that data down to the expense of your health insurance and your deductibles, right? Because those may change dramatically. We had a client not terribly long ago who we strongly encouraged to go through and really dig into those policies before she said yes. She had a young family at home. And as we all know, when you have a young family, you use all of your health benefits.
Yes.
And so, unfortunately, she didn't do that research. She didn't ask for that data ahead of time. And that position ended up costing her out of pocket about $10,000 a year because of the difference in the health insurance. So we want to make sure that you are asking all of those questions. And if an employer is hesitant to provide you this information as they're making an offer,
Oh,
that
goodness.
again is a red flag.
Yeah, and I love you ran through all of these, all the information that you
Right.
need to know before accepting or rejecting a job. I mean, yes, the young family, you're going to need time flexibility. You're going to need more remote work. You're going to need to know, again, healthcare plans, stock options. Even what I heard was a work prenup with the severance pay.
Right. As the
Anyway,
higher up we go, we want to make
yes.
sure that that's in play. Another colleague of mine pointed out just recently that if you're being asked to sign a non-compete, at minimum, your severance agreement should match the amount of time in your non-compete. Because if you can't
Interesting.
work in your industry or your vertical for
Yeah.
6 months or a year, but the severance is only 90 days, that isn't going to match up for you.
That's great. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. That's a great way to wrap your head around a severance and non-compete. Absolutely. You speak about confidence as part of, the package, the physical presence, knowing your numbers, knowing your skills and strengths. And how do you build confidence in a client? Because a interview is a nervous and anxiety causing situation.
So one of the things I always share with people is that number one, this is going to be uncomfortable, right? So we're
Yes.
going to get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think I've said that already. But then when you're in that conversation, male or female, doesn't matter. We get to that point sometimes where we get that feeling in our stomach, right? Where we're just like, oh, this is uncomfortable and it's making me a little nauseous. And oh, pull back, pull back. Your gut is saying, pull back, pull back. Don't do that. Stay there. That uncomfortableness is the sweet spot because we're taught by so many of us are taught, put your head down, do the work. And if you're good enough, you might possibly get noticed. And if you're lucky enough, right? So we tend to pull back as a result because we don't want to boast. We don't want to brag. No one can know what you bring to the table until you tell them. So when you get that weird sort of uncomfortable feeling, stay there. Stay right there and keep going.
Great. That is a great way to communicate that it's an interview. This is not like sitting on your couch watching the football game.
No,
You know,
right.
this is your place to shine. This is your place to really, again, be that person who solves their problem.
You bet. You
Yeah,
bet.
that's great. Great. Well, this has been a wonderful interview. So many important and things that I haven't thought about in an interview. And Michelle, how can people get more information about your firm, about your company?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking. You can reach out to us on our website, dscareermanagement.com. You're welcome to message me. You can email me directly, Michelle M, Michelle with two L's, and Michelle M at dscareermanagement.com. But you can also just connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm out there a lot. I'm incredibly active on LinkedIn, and people connect with me every day there. So you're welcome to connect with me again. It's Michelle Merritt, two L's, two R's, two T's, just two of everything. Just remember that, and you'll be in good
All
shape. So,
right, double lucky. Great. Well, again, thank you so
Thank
much for your
you.
time and for this information and helping people get their dream jobs.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, take care. I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people. Want more? Visit my website at yourspectacularlife.com.